And it is the 9 o'clock hour. It is our final hour together, and so there's a festive mood in the room. And yet decorum requires us to also acknowledge that there's a member of Congress in the room. Those are not mutually exclusive. It's okay for us to be happy and feeling good about life and filled with a certain cautious optimism as we say hi to Congressman Michael Burgess. Welcome. How you doing?
Good morning, Mark. So great to be with you this morning.
So nice to have you. So we were just talking off the air, so let me let you expound. As a Republican, as a conservative, this whole election year has taken us on crazy twists and turns. You and I were both Ted Cruz people.
Yes.
That didn't happen, but now there's only one choice. And I think it's important to say that I'm not backing Trump, and I don't think either are you, with some horrible angst. It's like, oh, I hate that I have this choice, but all right, I'll hold my nose. Ah, puh, puh. No, he's been on his game, and we've been fairly mistake-free ball, and he's doing
for at least 48 hours.
Exactly right. So I've been pretty good with the last few weeks, and let me get your review.
I share that that guarded optimism. You know, you had a caller from Grapevine, and while I was driving in, and it was almost like that would have been me if I was not in Congress, and okay, 40 years younger, but still, that would have been me. And you look at the things that are important to you in this race, and for me right now, yeah, the courts are important, but a lot of people, that doesn't really get into their level of consciousness. If you're not thinking about what happens at the agency level, at the federal agency, with the growth of federal government at the agency level, yeah, through the Bush administration, but really through the Obama administration, do you think that's going to change in the Clinton administration? No, it will not. Look, I am for the candidate who is for a little bit less big government right now, and I'm enthusiastically for them.
24 hours ago, I was involved in a fascinating on-radio at the same time Twitter sparring match with our friend Mark Cuban, who's an awesome guy. Love him. Love the Mavs and love his story of entrepreneurship and love him on Shark Tank. But he's all in the tank for Hillary now. But I'm not going to take away from him the notion that he has thought about this. And he's coming at me with trade and business things. And do you also share my thought that trade is not one of my favorite parts of the Trump economic agenda?
Well, I agree with Mr. Trump, and actually I agreed with him when he first popped up on the radar screen a year ago, June, that we do make dumb trade deals.
Okay, let me come back to that in a second. But the Cuban point was, and Cuban would seem to be, I guess Cuban is exhibit A, that if you show me 100 people who are in business, who are entrepreneurs, doesn't mean they are necessarily of the same political ilk, because here's proud entrepreneur, and I don't think Cuban is a screaming lib, not at all. But all in for Hillary. What the heck? Yeah. And I'm not asking you for explain for Mark Cuban. He explains very well for himself on his Twitter feed, at M. Cuban. Let's talk about some of the business stuff, because Trump did a business, kind of a New York Economic Club speech yesterday that I thought was great on regulation, on taxes, on growth, whole enchilada.
And the regulation for me is front and center. That's where I bump up my head against the wall every single day. And you can pick your agency. I mean, for me, it's Health and Human Services, FDA, with some of the drug pricing stuff that's going on right now. They are a big part of the problem. Department of Labor, Department of Energy, Department of Commerce. I mean, just come right down the list. If you don't do something to bend that back a little bit, it almost becomes insurmountable. We talk about the courts. If we don't fix this problem now, it'll be 30 years before we can perhaps bring things back to center. The same is true with the federal agencies. The federal government, when you hear someone say, well, look, a career person in the federal government doesn't have an axe to grind, well, that's not exactly true. They're all Democrats. Everyone who lives in Northern Virginia is a Democrat.
Also self-perpetuating.
Yes.
They realize that if they come at America with a notion of reining government in, reducing regulation, affording more liberty, they are essentially taking action that will end their own jobs.
That's
hard to ask anybody to do.
It is. And that's why, you know, when I think I see people on the Republican side who say, well, I'm just, you know, I can't be for Trump in this situation. They want to perpetuate what they've got going on because it ain't a bad deal for them. It is not a bad deal
exactly
for them.
Right.
But for me and you and everybody that I represent, it ain't the best. It ain't the best. So time for choosing. Yes, we've got to. Then I wrote a letter to the Dallas Morning News after they did their editorial endorsement. I've gotten some flack for it. But at the end of the letter, a non-vote for Trump is a vote for Hillary Clinton.
Of course it is.
And that is, people have to understand that.
Yeah. And God bless the DMN. I love them. They're my friends. I write for them. But I did a little immediate, I mean, within 12 hours, they allowed me to post my rebuttal. So I appreciate them and thank them for that. But I said, guys, if you're for Hillary, that's fine. If your editorial board is now for Hillary, that's fine. But please don't, pardon me, insult me a little by telling me that free markets and individual liberty still mean something to you. Because it is impossible to speak that language while endorsing Hillary Clinton. It can't be done.
And I think so, too. And, of course, some of the big things we've talked about over the years, the border security, fixing the problems at the VA, reforming the tax code, one or more of these might be a priority for President Trump. And wouldn't that be great? Wouldn't it be great if we had border security as a priority in this country for a change? I'm willing to roll the dice on this. I know what happens with a Clinton presidency. I don't want to go there. Obviously, I'm trying to be reelected, so if she's elected, I will be there. But then it's the restraining order Congress that I'm still a part of, and I don't want to do that. I want to fix problems that people have, and a lot of those problems mean the government has to get out of the way. Let the state take over that function. I'm all for it. Let's go. Let's get it done.
What have you said and done this past week? I caught the emails and sort of caught it on the fly. I've said for a long time that Barack Obama will not close Guantanamo before he's gone. It depends on what the meaning of close is.
Yes, sir.
Because you can kill it by attrition and send up 80% of its people somewhere else without technically closing it. But you've taken some steps and said some things, because obviously if Guantanamo does close, we got to put those people somewhere.
That is, yes. Well, and the people that are there, of course, you're reaching a point of an irreducible minimum. The people that are there are really the worst of the worst. And the whole notion that you can bring folks to this country and put them into the American court system, it's not a good idea. Well, the Democrats opposed it. When Barack Obama was first elected and he had a filibuster-proof majority of the Senate, could have done anything he wanted, certainly had a huge majority of the House. They started down this road and they were stopped. Eric Holder had to stop because Chuck Schumer said, no, do not bring those bad dudes to Manhattan.
But that was so 2009. And would Schumer say that today?
Oh, I believe he would. I mean, we just had the 15th anniversary of 9/11.
Would he say it a couple of months from now when we've all forgotten 9/11 again, or most people have?
I think that that feeling is pretty intense, that you do not want to have these trials in the middle of Manhattan. I mean, you know, Mark, I don't want to go too far into stuff I shouldn't talk about, but the preservation, the chain of custody on some of the evidence of people you pick up on the battlefield, yeah, it could be difficult to defend that in a United States court jurisdiction.
The bar is different because would they automatically get, the moment they set foot on American soil, the same constitutional rights as an American criminal defendant necessarily?
I believe that is the case, and that has been the argument. And any good criminal defense lawyer would be able to say, look, this guy was picked up. There was no chain of custody. We don't know that this $2 million the shepherd had in his back pocket wasn't his own legally gotten earnings.
I mean, shepherd. That's fantastic.
So that's
oh,
the
my
problem.
Heavens. I'm
the guy
sorry.
Had a good a good day at the sheep market, and happened to be paid off in U.S. cash. What a deal.
You have $1 million in your cloak. Oh, I'm sorry. Is that bad? Sorry, old joke. 866-660-5759. What does a congressman do all day? Stuff like this and stuff like this. Congressman Burgess knows nothing about this. I know nothing about this, but we are in Grapevine. Cheryl has a story. Hi, Cheryl. How are you?
Good morning. I'm doing well.
I understand Congressman Burgess has done something for you in the last days and weeks.
Oh, yes, sir. Congressman Burgess, again, my name is Cheryl Hampton. I live in Grapevine, Texas right now. 5 years ago, you helped us process my fiancé visa. My husband was in the military. He's a veteran. And thank you so much. I just want to say it's a huge thanks to you. Yesterday, I just had my oath taking, and I'm now an American citizen.
Look at you!
Congratulations.
Oh, my goodness.
The hair standing up on the back of my neck. What a moment.
That is it.
Yes, it's amazing. It was one of the coolest ceremony I've ever had in my life.
Thank you for sharing that. I thank you, listeners. Thank you. I think Congress was pretty fond of this moment as well. How much of this And Cheryl, thank you. God bless
Cheryl,
you,
thank
and
you.
And your family. What's the conveyor belt like at a congressman's office for the citizenship done the right way?
Well, just casework in general is a big part of what goes on in the district office. The district office is not big political strategy meetings. It's taking care of constituents and their problems, and generally their problems with a federal agency. And in her case, it was immigration and naturalization. I don't know what the difficulty they were encountering and why congressional interest was important. It still takes a long time. Reference her observation. It was 5 years ago. And just made me also think, wouldn't it have been terrible if someone else had jumped in line before them with them doing all of the work correctly? But the congressional office does. I mean, anyone who has a beef with a federal agency, I'll need a signed form for a constituent inquiry. And even though I may not believe in the issue myself, if a constituent has a beef with a federal agency, sure, I'll go to the mat for them.
That's that part that is, you know, you are what you are, and you are a conservative Republican, but you know that your district is not monolithic, and there are things that you will do for all of it, because you literally have to represent everybody.
Yeah, the constituent services part, I mean, that's the part that reminds me most of the practice of medicine. I mean, it's... We don't talk about it a lot. It's like you didn't talk about if you had a particularly successful outcome with a patient therapy. I mean, you couldn't talk about that. Same is true with constituent service. But I'm actually grateful this woman called in this morning and shared that story
that
with us.
That is very cool.
Because we oftentimes don't get to talk about those things.
And I'm glad we had a chance to. And thank you, Cheryl, for calling. All right, final couple of minutes. What else is going on? Are we stoked for the debates a week from Monday? I mean, it doesn't have to be presidential. It could be any kind of issue. What's going on in the Michael Burgess plate?
Well, the presidential election almost takes precedence over everything. Sure, there's I'm trying to prepare myself for what happens at the committee level next year in healthcare policy, but a lot of that is I've got to prepare what if Clinton is elected or what if Trump is elected. The fortunate thing for me is the Trump policy drawer perhaps there is not all that deep, and I can supply a lot of the ideas. So I'm happy to do that when they call. You referenced replacing Obamacare with health savings accounts. I'm all in, and there are some things we could do really day one with a president who would sign the laws to get that stuff taken care of.
I've been with a guy who's both a congressman and a doctor and singular of value in both those. Let's not bury the lead, and let's finish strong. Mr. Trump has talked about this, but people can dig up some quotes where he once has seemed somewhat friendly to the notion as a government for a conduit of healthcare delivery. Where do you think he is? What energizes you and or troubles you about Trump on Obamacare?
Well, I think the number one thing is we've had a president for 8 years who would not sign any change, so it didn't matter what good idea you came up with. I also think recently you've seen a sensitivity for Mr. Trump, the Article 1, Article 2 separation of powers, and things must pass through the legislative branch. It's his obligation to sign them or not, as he wishes, but it's not necessarily up to the president to come up with all the ideas. The legislative branch is the one who is going to have to actually write the laws. The good news there is, Paul Ryan, to his credit, has tasked us, House members, with putting down on paper the better.gop ideas, not just in healthcare, foreign policy, economic policy, tax policy, you name it. So those policy works, if you will, are all there. And I'm looking for... when Donald Trump wins, a good deal of collaboration on the already House-developed policies that can move forward. Healthcare will be a big one. Get rid of that individual mandate. Day one, executive order. I'll take one more executive order, please. That is suspend the individual mandate, and then let's start back down the road on a market system in healthcare.
But I'm confused, Congressman, because all the smart kids say that Donald Trump is going to be an Hugo Chavez-style authoritarian, isn't going to do any of those things that you just said.
Well, again, I think there is a recognition that there are three branches of government.
Yes.
Trump has even acknowledged that, and it's our job to provide the educational background and the policy background.
And he knows he needs it. I mean, he believe you me, if it's business, he will scoreboard you all day long, and with good reason. But from Jeb Henseling over there at Government Services to you to Pete Sessions at Rules to various other, they say when they've had the sit down with Trump, he's like a sponge. He absolutely wants to know what he knows what he doesn't. know, which may be one of the best characteristics any of us can have.
And, yeah, a lot of phone calls for information that have gone back and forth, and I look forward for that continuing
we'll
in the future.
We'll be there for him, and please, Lord, let that happen. So thank you. Always a pleasure to have you.
Great.
Thanks to
Mark.
Leslie, everybody in the staff, Congressman Michael Burgess, burgess.house.gov, to keep track of everything going on in his District 26 land. It is U.S. Congressman and Dr. Michael Burgess. Always a joy.